Newly declassified U.S. intelligence documents reveal the United States and its allies had foreseen and facilitated the rise of the ISIL terrorist group in Syria as a counterweight to the government of President Bashar al-Assad. Now, while this does not come as a surprise to many, it does put into perspective the role the U.S. and its allies have played for the security and stability of the Middle East. In this edition of The Debate, we take a deeper look at the U.S.-ISIL alliance and what this means for the international coalition against a terror group. Now let me start off by introducing our guest. Joining us from Orlando is former American linguist, intelligence linguist, that is, Scott Rickard. And joining us from New York is independent scholar Peter Sinnott. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us here on Press TV. Now, Mr. Rickard, I'll start off with you, if I may. How revealing are these documents, in your opinion, if one looks at the trajectory of the U.S. engagement in the Middle East, especially in Iraq and Syria? Do these revelations come as a surprise to you?
Well, absolutely not a surprise to me. I've talked about this for well over 2 years on Press TV and other venues that will allow me to speak publicly about these events. But it's very clear here that the CIA, Mossad, and other MI6 and other intelligence operations for working for the West, NATO, and Gulf State allies have constantly, I mean constantly, supported these groups, knowing for a fact that they would actually grow into a much larger, much more unattainable efforts when it comes to controlling a true revolution and something that would be constructive in the area. What they've created is the same kind of chaos that they've created in Libya, and this has been a tactic that has been used strategically by the West in the region for well over 100 to 150 years. So I think what you see here is the Western allies and Gulf State allies operating in tandem to create a facade of this ISIS that was really nothing more than Al-Qaeda 2.0, where in fact most of the Al-Qaeda operations in the past were also supported and funded by Western intelligence and Western military operations. And it's very clear to see that a lot of the weapons going into Qatar and the weapons going into Saudi Arabia have been flown in and out of Turkey, Jordan, and also in and out of Iraq. And you've seen a real clear operation here for over 3 years supporting these militants and these Takfiris and many of them coming in and under control of many individuals that are embedded with these militants that have been working on behalf of Western intelligence, and they've been there for quite some time.
Okay, Mr. Sinnott, I put the same question to you. What do you make of these revelations?
Well, 2012, of course, was an election year, and there was a great deal of debate public in Congress about the whole situation in Syria. Now, while Hillary Clinton clearly was still siding with Syria, a lot of the Republican congressmen had come up with this sense that we need to see Assad as an enemy. And the problem that then developed was, who could be the ally? What group would you support? So what they found was actually very confusing. They found a myriad of groups. They were very uncertain which ones would actually, what their values were, who they supported. Their fear was that they were giving arms to Al-Qaeda. And as a result, we saw policy become somewhat paralyzed. Well, it was paralyzed. And then, of course, Obama made his declaration of drawing a red line about the use of chemical warfare against civilians by the Assad regime. And of course, later, we had these large barrel bombs used on the populations in Aleppo and other areas. So the United States, I think the Obama regime has basically hoped that all of it would go away. And the situation has been since December that they have been arming and training a large force in Iraq that has not yet been deployed, which is expected to be deployed in a few days. Now, when you look back on the situation then in Syria and what they're trying to do now, in February, they're talking about now putting units together for training of opposition to Syria in Turkey with U.S. and Turkish trainers. If we take the same timeline, 6 months, what they're really trying to do is form a two-front war for ISIL. And that still remains to open up on the Syrian front.
All right, Mr. Senate, so, let me just jump in there.
I think the U.S. still views it very much as Syria
is separate. We'll get to the question of these current militants that are being trained in just a bit. However, now, I don't know if you've gone through these documents that have been revealed, but the report explicitly states that the U.S., European Union, Turkey, and Persian Gulf monarchies view terror groups like the ISIL, a strategic asset towards regime change in Syria. Now, this is not something that just came out of the blue. This is a concerted strategy that was adopted by the U.S. from the get-go to topple President Bashar al-Assad.
I have no doubt that the United States wanted and still wants to topple Bashar al-Assad. That is very clear. But what the U.S. didn't expect was that there'd be a force that was seen as a greater threat to emerge. Now, there's a famous phrase in English, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. But I'm not so sure that is the case here. I think the enemy of my enemies are both my enemies.
All right, Mr. Rickert, I put the same question to you. Was this a surprise and an unintended consequence? Because looking at these documents that have been revealed, it's painting quite a different picture.
Oh, absolutely. It was not a surprise to anyone with the inside information that understood that this organization was meant to create the kind of chaos and was also meant to create similar chaos in Iraq. This type of activity creates the right scenario whereby Western geopolitical influences and Western geopolitical they can achieve their objectives much easier by creating chaos and weakening the governments, both Iraq and Syria. And what's really clear here is that it's important to understand that this is not a force that the Americans are trying to actually control. There have been well under 5,000 military combat missions, airborne military combat missions against this this terrorist organization they're calling ISIS. When in fact it's been going on for 4 or 5 months now with this quote-unquote coalition forces. And if you compare it to anything that happened to Kosovo, there were over 30,000 military combat missions, airborne military combat missions, in just a two-month period when they fought against Milosevic. So the concerted effort that is really required to really take down a small organization like ISIS and like these organizations that the CIA and intelligence organizations have built is quite simple if the military might is used against it. But unfortunately, they're being allowed to destroy cities like Kobani and Palmyra and just really assassinate people to show the atrocities in order to gain public opinion and to basically feed the military-industrial complex that is really the only winner in this game, as well as obviously the geopolitical control of the region.
Right, and Mr. Senate, I'm going to quote a part from these documents that the Defense Intelligence Agency wrote to many other government branches in the U.S., and I'm quoting them now. The Al-Qaeda in Iraq, or AQI, supported the Syrian opposition from the beginning, both ideologically and through the media, end quote. Again, I would like to emphasize on the point that this is not something that a situation became out of control or morphed into something that was unforeseen or unexpected.
Well, the Al-Qaeda element in 2012 was seen as a leading element, and there were several other elements, organizations and groups. And because you're having select documents, you're missing this broader debate that was very intense, which was saying, who can we trust? And the answer was, we're not sure. So what you saw was a paralysis of policy as a result. And it's if we look at the fact that this new agreement has just come out, it took many years before the U.S. was willing to actually train forces and identify forces they could trust. So I think given this, I think we're actually just seeing the United States has finally come to, under the Obama regime, to come to a consensus, a very limited consensus of action. There's been an awful lot of debate in the West as this has emerged, the whole crisis in Syria and the tremendous amount of refugees has been featured on American television since the onset of this war against Assad. And to view Assad as the someone to be supported by the United States is frankly, it's kind of absurd. But if we look at 2012, in the confusion, there was a sense that maybe something might be better with Assad than anyone else. But they basically were paralyzed in 2012 in making this decision. So it only emerged later that they could come to a consensus that this ISIL was a threat to to civilization in general.
Right, but Mr. Sinnott, was it really about who can we trust? Because standing from here, it looks like the question was more like, how much can we risk?
Well, risk, it was and still is very large, because the idea of risk, if you put in ground troops, or even with the flights of having someone captured, is a very high risk. Is it really worth it to the United States policy? And the Obama regime has been extremely reluctant in coming to this to a conclusion. And I'm not surprised that they have finally found some people that they feel they can train. But the reluctance of the United States to be involved, while Russia has basically been given a free pass. That port is going all the time. It's bringing in the arms for the Assad regime. That has never, and they have basically escaped superpower scrutiny. So they are a given in this conflict because it's their arms that go to both sides. So Russia is the one that's making the money in this.
Okay, hold on
battle.
To your thoughts, gentlemen. Let me just cross over to our social media networking pages and see what our viewers have to say about this.
ISIS means Israel's security and intelligence services, no doubt about it. The US didn't know how to react, so they monitored the situation, impotence at the level of our intelligence services, as always. Without the US, Saudi Arabia, Qatar and Turkey's Erdogan, ISIL will not resist even one day. It was all pre-planned to support, encourage, sponsor and train foreign-backed terrorists to destabilize the region for establishing the regional supremacy, a bootlicking servants of terrorist sponsors. All the dirt will come out now about the corruption of the US government and their backhanded deals with terrorists. Benghazi was a gun smuggling operation, and of course, we know who paid with their lives and who covered it up. This whole administration, the leader, and both parties are as corrupt as it gets, and I wish we could replace the whole bunch of them. As this campaign moves forward, so much more will be revealed. The US and Israel created ISIL to destabilize the Middle East.
All right, those were some of the viewer comments there being shared on our Facebook page. Let me get back to our guests now. Mr. Rickard, you've been patiently shaking your head there. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, the commentary by Peter Sinnott is actually absurd, that the Russians are making money on this this war that's been instigated clearly by the West and the Gulf State and Israel and NATO allies. So this is unreal. To actually even think that this is a gain for Russia from a financial perspective. Russia is doing the same thing for Syria that it's having to react to in Western instigation in, say, Ukraine and other places around the globe. You don't see the kinds of instigations against these kinds of nations that are cooperating with Western banks and are cooperating with Western geopolitical agendas. You only see this kind of activity against countries that defy the absurdity of the Western financial system. So what really happens here is that Russia, you know, that has had to put up with Western aggression for over the last century, has really rebounded, and once again, even from the sanctions, they've rebounded very successfully. Their economy is actually booming again, and they are doing quite well despite the Western attempts to really control the economies outside of the IMF-compliant countries. So when you look at a country like Syria that obviously was operating more independently, much like Libya was prior to NATO destroying that nation, they fortunately, the UN and Americans kind of caught on by the time that the West was trying to completely destroy Syria. And thankfully, China and Russia saved the day by basically in the Security Council saying, no, do not attack Syria and destroy it like you've done to Libya in 2011. So unfortunately, the kind of commentary that come out of individuals like Peter get playtime in the United States, and people in media really don't understand that they're actually misleading the American people, because they actually believe this rhetoric that they're putting towards the people. There is absolutely no truth to the fact that Russia is making any money here. The fact is that Russia is responding to horrific aggression coming from a wide variety of allies, right, that are destroying nation after nation across the Middle East and Africa.
Okay, well, we're on the topic of arms supplies. Mr. Sinnott, Rand Paul has lashed out at America's foreign policy, and he said that ISIL exists, and I'm quoting him now, and grew stronger because of the hawks in our party who gave arms indiscriminately, and most of those arms were snatched up by ISIS, unquote, or ISIL as we call it. How would you respond to that?
Well, this was the great fear in the Pentagon, clearly, that the arms would end up in the wrong hands, and they clearly did from whatever was done in 2012. And what you saw was the Obama presidency step back from involvement, and we saw ISIL grow stronger. You keep in mind that the American public, on a practically daily news, they read every day, they see the videos every day of some the atrocities of ISIL, and they're disgusted with it. It's a question of involvement. To what degree do we want to be involved beyond humanitarian aid? And even that is very difficult to give. So the ISIL phenomenon is very closely watched in this country, and anyone that shows sympathy from it for this organization is quite frankly would be regarded as someone supporting a terrorist group. You've had a number of people of Islamic background that have traveled from the United States and many Western countries to join ISIL. That doesn't make it a Western organization. What we have is a very large-scale civil war in Islam between the Salafism of Saudi Arabia and the existence of Shiism in the East. So this division between a militant Sunni and a Shia Islam is very pronounced. The Christians have been wiped off the board, basically. And we're seeing many aspects of this in the lack of fight for towns that are Shia by Sunni army members of Iraq and such. So now we've been working on how can we build a force that will fight for everyone in Iraq.
Right, and I think, Mr. Rickard, we're quickly running out of time. I put the last question to you, Mr. Rickard. Is this a civil war in Islam? Are we seeing this war between Sunnis and Shias for greater power? Because the last time I checked, the casualties mounting from ISIL are both Shias, Sunnis, Christians, and all other denominations that seem to disagree with them.
Well, absolutely not. This is not a civil war against the Shiite and the Sunni. Obviously, there are binds that tie some of the Sunni that are involved in the Takfiri level of activity that's going on in the warfare side of things. But at the end of the day, the Shiite-Sunni warfare mentality is just fuel for the West to fool the people. When you look at the people that are actually fueling the fire and stoking the engines of this war, these are the people that are basically over-arming Qatar and over-arming Saudi Arabia Much of these weapons that are supposedly ending up in the wrong hands have passed through Qatar and passed through Saudi Arabia deliberately so that they could act as proxies. I mean, just look at what's going on in Yemen right now. It's indicative of the kinds of, you know, they talk, Mr. Sanat talked about the large bombs being used by Assad. Take a look at some of the video footage coming out of Yemen
and
look at the
enormity
of the bombs.
And on that note, I'm going to have to stop you there, Mr. Rickard. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. That's a former American intelligence linguist, Scott Rickard, joining us from Orlando. And joining us from New York was independent scholar Peter Sinnott. Gentlemen, thank you very much for participating in today's edition of The Debate. From me and the entire team here in Tehran, it's goodbye.